Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Guest is Kim Bailey, poet and writer. Kim, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic, fantastic. You know, we're in the middle of National Poetry Month. Why do you think that poetry is important?
Well, poetry gives us beauty and truth in the world, where there's not very much of that going on these days. So
I can understand that. Well, what I'd like you to do at this point is share some of your work.
Thank you. Okay. So I can go ahead and start reading?
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and start with a couple of poems that I shared with you already, Michael.
All right.
And the first one is Into the Mist. I wrote this for my son, Wesley, who lives in Colorado with his wife, and it's about the day that I went to his orientation for college up at the University of Kansas. Into the mist, hail and icy driving, slow but in a hurry, the sun, its first light upon the Kansas prairie, covered white, underneath noise, dormant, waiting for the thaw. My son, waiting for me, as I navigated black roads deceptive, they promised to hold me between the lines. But the thin layers of ice of snow threatened to catapult me into white oblivion, helpless when all I wanted was to see my son's dark eyes light up when I walked inside the student union where he attended orientation, the way they shined when I could make those drives to watch him play basketball, even though he acted like it was no big deal. It really was. And this made every penny for gas and early morning mile worth all the nights I sat awake with fire in my belly and tears on my face, hungry and alone, forgotten. Nearly a decade later, my belly yet burns, not from hunger, but with grief. And tears fall less as words come more to blank pages, recalling his smile and dark contemplating gaze. I wonder how I could travel so far removed from that young man who once held my heart in his tiny hands as I watched snow fall backlit by street lamps in the flow of a crystal fog. The end.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
That was beautiful. How does a poem begin for you, with an idea, a form, or an image?
I would say it's an idea, and it's quite organic in its conception. I don't know how many poems I've written that begin when it's just the most inconvenient time to write a poem. I'm washing dishes, or I'm driving, or I'm in the shower, and I have to just rush into, you know, through what I'm doing and to get the poem down. And that's how they begin.
What are some of the predominant themes in your work?
Relationships, of course. which are quite important to me, especially with my children. I would say loss. The way I process loss and grief has been through poetry, mainly. I started doing that when I was about 9 years old. So,
oh, really? Oh,
yes.
Really? I was going to ask. I'm sorry. Please.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, I can hear you.
All right. I am so excited that you're here. So I'm just, I have so many questions to ask you. So, but please continue in terms of processing as a young girl at 9 years old.
Well, when I was 9 years old, maybe it was younger, maybe it was maybe 10. I don't know. You know, I'm getting kind of up there, so my memory's failing. But I just remember being a very, very reflective, contemplative girl. And I would go on long walks into the woods or alongside the creek, usually with my dog, and I would think about everything, and then I would write things down. And that's how the poetry came about. And I did a lot of that in response to some of the things that was happening in my life with my family, my parents. There was a lot of chaos. There was a lot of brokenness there, and that was my response. It was how I navigated those things, I think.
Well, share some more of your work, Kim.
Okay. All right, let's see. I'm going to read a poem that was inspired by my mom and sister, and it's called How to Help. When Mama cooks supper, I wash the dishes while my sister dries, caressing them like a crystal ball, and we saw our unmapped futures unrequited. Babies are made this way. We clench our teeth, hold our breath, hope for more, sometimes less. We got more than what we prayed for, more than we expected, non-refundable. Mama can't wash the dishes anymore. We wring our hands, howl at windmills, feel the earth fall upon our skin. It clings like molasses until we are face down, asphyxiated. I can't say that word. I try to help. My words are sucked away. My breaths are shallow. A mountain has formed in the curve of my spine. My chest is gravel. Scatter me on fields of cotton. Close the world. The end.
Do you think that you were meant to be a poet?
Yeah, I do.
Tell me why.
Because sometimes it's my only language.
That's a very powerful thing to say.
Well, yeah, I think that when I had no other way of expressing myself or, you know, I didn't have any other voice, poetry was what came through regardless, you know, of all of that. So,
all right.
I would say
well, please,
so. Yeah.
Please share another.
All right. This poem I wrote for my daughter, my only daughter, and she and I have a lot in common. I'll just say that. And that's a good thing. So, okay. The poem is called Jericho. Her hair cascading like a river, like the fabric she weaves upon her looms, slender fingers pulling back one to another, threads from my heart, discarding most of me. She builds a wall of tapestry, blocking her light, breaking the glass within my bones, raking away shards from a tempest, burning what is left, as though holding any part of me would corrupt her delicate ivory skin, unblemished, no stain or scars, no blood, darkening her door, running through her veins. Resentment turns to strychnine, crystallizing hate with each breath, convulsed, seized. Only time will unravel knotted threads. Fell stone. The end.
Again, another beautiful piece. Where do you hail from, Kim?
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
All right.
The choo-choo city.
All right. And how has growing up in Chattanooga, Tennessee informed your work?
Well, a lot of my work was born in nature. I used to take walks in the woods or along the creek or, you know, by the lake. I was outside a lot. My dad was a hunter and a fisherman, and I learned how to do those things with him.
Mm-hmm.
And the mountains and the Tennessee River, the change of seasons. We didn't get a lot of snow. We got mostly ice, but just the beauty of the transitions of seasons that I grew up with. Even though I grew up there, I also lived a lot in Florida as a child, and then I went to high school there. So I had a lot of exposure to some, you know, a couple of different areas, and all of those things had an impact on the way I saw the world and how I wrote my pieces. So.
Well, let's take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Sure.
Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Kim Bailey. If you'd like to call in and ask Kim a question, the telephone number is 646-787-1631. Kim, name three of your favorite historical poets.
My favorite historical poets. Well, one of the most recent ones I love is Mary Oliver, and she just passed away this year. William Shakespeare, of course.
Okay. All right.
And Maya Angelou.
What about their work inspires you?
Let's see. It's honest and it's real. I think Maya Angelou is probably my favorite. She just told her story and expressed who she was in every word of her poetry. And
now,
it was powerful. Yeah.
Yes. Now I know that you might write nonfiction as well. What are the qualitative differences between nonfiction and poetry?
You have a lot more to work with.
Okay. Right.
Poetry requires brevity, and nonfiction, you know, you can expound a little bit more on an idea or a train of thought. But they're both the same because it's all about the truth.
Mm.
And which I think it's the core and the essence of my writing is how is that I just have to be honest. No matter what I write, it's got to be honest. Even if it's not very pleasant to read or to think about, it's something that I have to do. So.
Another very powerful statement, being able to share the truth through your work. That's extremely powerful. Please share another of your works.
Okay, I would like to read a poem that was published by Marianne Flick, and her the song is blog post. She did this July of 2017, published this for me, and then she also nominated it for a Best of the Net. It's called Woman at the Well. I don't want to be the woman at the well, walking so far to fetch water for a man who won't make me his wife. I don't want to be that woman who was taken time and time again, only to be coldly cast aside. I don't want to be the woman who sees a man and does not recognize him as the Savior, the Messiah, Jesus Christ. I want to be the woman who takes his hand and knows in him there is everlasting life. I don't want to carry this plate on my shoulders, all the pain of those who came and walked right out my door. I just want to drink the living water, the kind that fills me up and keeps me coming back for more. I don't want to be the woman at the well, desperately drawing day by day from an empty place. I don't want to throw pennies in the fountain, well or spring, hoping my love will finally show his face. I just want to drink the living water, the kind that never runs dry, the kind that never leaves me thirsting for more, or leaves me with these tears in my eyes. I don't want to be the woman at the well. I want to be the woman worth fighting for. The end.
Very powerful. Very powerful. You've published in a number of online and print journals. Does knowing that your poems are published and out there in the world validate your being a poet, or are you content knowing that they're out of your system?
I think it's probably the latter more than it is the first. I'm glad that I've shared my poetry with the world finally. It took me a number of years to get up the nerve to do it. I didn't start publishing until 2016. I was first published in 2016, January 2016.
Oh, really?
Yes, and that, let's see, how old was I? I was 40, I can't do math. I'm a poet, so.
Okay. You're a poet and you know it. All right, all right.
I know it. Yeah, my dad used to say, you're a poet and you didn't know it. So, yeah. I was in my late 40s when I was first published. And I was too afraid to share. I was too afraid to bare myself, my soul, number one. And number two, I was afraid of rejection.
Yes.
But now, I mean, I'm not afraid. I mean, I send poems out all the time, get rejections all the time, and it's like, okay, yeah, next. Yeah.
Well, speaking of sending poems out and the whole process of rejection, which is a part of the game, what advice would you give an aspiring poet about sending his or her work out?
I would say, just do it. Don't think about it. Don't overthink it. I had a very good friend of I met online on writersdigest.com. I did a October 2015 platform challenge through Robert Lieber's blog. He's an editor there. And James, he might be listening, but he might not. He told me, just do it like a machine. You know, he just said, just like a machine, just crank them out and do it, you know. Because you're going to get rejected.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to get rejected. I agree.
Yes.
And
the other thing
It hurts sometimes,
oh,
too, Kim.
It does, Michael. And there are certain publications where I'm like, oh, please, please, please take a poem of mine, and they never do. And I'm like, what's wrong with you people, you know? but then I brush it off. But the other part of that is, okay, just do it. And then the other part of that is each poem or each piece you write will eventually find its rightful home.
Mm.
Eventually.
You are so wise. Wow.
That,
boy, that was another nice statement. Wow.
Well,
I'm going to write these down.
I can't take credit because this is what I've learned from other people who have been so supportive and offered me the advice I needed to pursue this. So
yes.
I'm just paying it forward.
Paying it forward.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm enjoying you tonight, Kim. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just this brief period of time, I've learned so much. So thank you.
Thank you.
Many poets have different methods for their writing. Some write on paper and then transmit to a blog. Others type their work out in Word and then transfer it. What is your preferred method of writing?
I had written on napkins, the backs of receipts. I've written on my hands, on my arms. It's just whatever I can get my hands on at the moment, because my poetry is so organic that it's like, if I don't get it out now, I won't be able to catch it.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Because that's usually how it comes out.
Well, please share another of your works.
Okay. I'm just going to tell you, it's kind of a sad little story, but it's okay. I mean, things are okay now.
okay.
I had a dog, and his name was Coach. And he was a half Chihuahua, half Dachshund mix. And I adopted him from a friend of mine, and I helped his mother whelp the litter, so I helped him be born. And a year ago in January, he went missing. And I don't know where he is still. I just kind of hope he's okay, you know.
Yes.
That he found a home. But I kind of wrote this poem about him, even though it sounds like maybe it's about a human being, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, it's called Boy. It's called Boy. He is everywhere I am not, giving alms to a God inaccessible to us both, blood of these brittle bones. He walked past us at market between bananas and bread, or did he? Uncertainty lives here, my heart a heat-seeking missile made. He smiled at the camera, someplace familiar, my tears, unknown to him, water this garden. Perennials of grief. The end.
Would you share that one again, please?
Yes. It's called Boy. He is everywhere I am not, giving alms to a God inaccessible to us, both, blood of these brittle bones. He walked past us at market between bananas and bread, or did he? Uncertainty lives here, my heart a heat-seeking missile made. He smiled at the camera, someplace familiar, my tears unknown to him, water this garden, perennials of grief. The end.
You know, somehow I hope he finds his way home.
My fantasy or my preferred pleasant fiction is to just believe that he came across a very nice family and he's happy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's the most important thing. The most important
yes.
thing. What makes a poem good, Kim?
Well, I don't have an MFA.
Okay. All right.
I don't even have a degree in English or writing or anything like that. So I don't know if I'm the person to answer this question. But what I think makes a poem good, when
okay.
I read poetry, when I read it, and when I consume poetry, is something that I don't think that you can necessarily teach. I think it's something that's just there. And I think it's just a matter of it being, like I said before, honest. I believe it needs to flow, of course, but it just depends on the reader, and it also depends on the writer. And I think it's a very subjective thing. It's not something, you know, one poem may be good to you, but it may not be good to this other person, and that's okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Well, please share two of your works.
Okay, two more.
Yes.
All right. Okay, this one I wrote for my husband. It's called Kitchen Floor Talk. We lie in linoleum-covered clover, counting lines of iambic pentameter, adding up, shielded within this place. We like it here. Let me show you mine. I see you, every scar, stripping away, layers, infinite losses rolled up sleeve. We dig it out for air and light. Alliteration, allegories, name narratives, odes. I hope we stay. The end.
Please share another.
Okay. This one is called Shadows of Estrangement. Among dark corners of this room, a tomb draped with dust from wings of moths, barbed wire fences, clothes in rust, petrified like one of those prehistoric dragonflies. I can't help but wonder, what happened to the baby dragonflies? Did they perish, leave their mother to die alone, trapped in golden resin, a gift to wear later around their necks to remember her? She probably won't complain. I mean, being so close to them is all she wanted, goes to show. Time will make right, in the end, give life to a mother's brokenness, her heart healing wounds wrought. Someone had to be wrong. What would she give or take for them to know her heart instead of judgment? Their oil lamps light the way for them to cast out darkness, radiate kindness. In penance, they offer a morsel of food, some cool water, her parched lips pursed, to whisper and hear, I love you, before time disintegrates millions of protons, neutrons into the void, like the ice caps of Earth melting. A tsunami of glacial regret, where her reasons for living drown beneath pretense to prove a point, becoming pointless. Are there shadows on your walls of Jericho? From her memory, I wonder, will you allow her to star, to illuminate, and one day shine? The end.
We'll be right back. right, we are back. I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Kim Bailey. If you'd like to reach out to Kim, the call-in number is 646-787-1631. Kim, all poets have several words that come up over and over and over again in their work. Words or sentences that they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use? Okay. See,
wow.
I asked the big questions.
That's a tough one. Wow. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe you did this. Okay. I would say broken.
Broken?
Something to do with brokenness.
Okay.
Breathing.
Freedom?
Breath. Breathing or breath.
Okay.
Yeah. And heart.
Heart. Mm-hmm. What about those three words resonate with you so much?
I think most of my poems have to do with how I feel about the people in my life,
mm-hmm.
or the people that I've lost. That's the essence of my poetry, I believe. My relationships with, you know, my relationship with people who are here or who are gone. And there's a lot of people who are gone. So I've written a lot of poetry in that regard.
All right. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
How, speaking of writing starting at the age of 9, how has your idea of poetry changed since you began writing poems? What has
changed?
Other than the
Woman at the Well that I read to you that was published by Marianne Flick, I don't rhyme my poetry normally. Back then, of course, I rhymed everything.
Okay.
Yeah, I've learned that that's not only is it not necessary, but it's not necessarily desirable in a poem either.
Okay.
I think I've learned that I can let go with my poetry, and the free verse is something that I enjoy writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that I have to subscribe to a certain form for it to be a good poem. I used to believe that I didn't do it right, you know, if I didn't write it a certain way, or if I did write it the way that, you know, my creative writing teacher in college said to write it, then it was not a good poem, but that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Please share another of your works.
Okay. This one is called Intangibles. Some say we should be grateful. I do not disagree, but the thing I need to say for you to hear is gratitude does not equal safety to a young mother. It fills an abstraction, not children's bellies, nor does it cure cancer or unbreak a heart or keep you warm or make the loneliness dissipate in cloud and sky. No, gratitude is a trick of the mind, like quarters appearing behind your ears when your uncle comes to visit. Is it there? It is there, but it does not belong to you. Only the cosmos, the empty blackness, devoid of air and light. The end.
We have a caller, Kim.
Okay.
I'm going to bring that person on. All right, hold on 1 second. Caller, you're on the air. Area code 309.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Kim. This is Marianne, and Ethan's here too. He's too far from the phone, even though this is on speakerphone.
All right,
Hi.
All right. Kim, can you hear Marianne?
I can.
Good. Well, I have a school teacher voice.
Yes, you do. I love it.
Marianne, do you have a question for Kim?
Oh, gosh. Well, you and your husband both write poetry. So what is, you know, do you feel that you inspire each other? How do you think that affects your poetry that both of you are writing?
That's a great question, Marianne. Thank you for asking that, because you did publish both of us. That same poem I read, The Woman at the Well, you published Shane as well, and that was a great thing. Thank you. I think that the reason why Shane and I are together is because he writes poetry. I mean, that's one of the reasons, but I mean, the main reason is that he friended me on Facebook because of poetry. And and we just struck up a friendship, and then we started dating, and then, of course, you know, everything happened and we got married. But I think that we do inspire one another. I think that our poetry has more room to breathe with one another, with each of us being creative as we are, that we each have more support, you know, to write and to talk about it too. When you're in a relationship with someone who has no idea what poetry is and doesn't appreciate it, which is fine. I mean, not everyone does. It's just difficult to grow.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is true.
Yeah.
Any other questions, Marianne?
Okay. How do you... You're still working as a case manager, right?
I am. I just started back in February with an agency here close to me, about 3 miles from my apartment.
Wow.
Yeah. And it does take away from my creativity, but I think it also lends to it. Especially once I get into my routine with my work. I'm still in the learning process right now, but the people that I have contact with out there just really inspire me. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you've moved around a lot. How do you think that's affected your writing?
I think it's given more depth and opened me up to different things, because, you know, I haven't stayed in one place. I've been able to see different parts of the country. I've even been to Italy. I lived there for a year. I would go back in a heartbeat and stay if I could, but it's just, I think it's given me the ability to see from different perspectives too.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Marianne.
Any moves in the future?
No. No, we love it. We love it here. It's
good.
Yeah. My job, I mean, I can retire from this place, and it would be a very comfortable place to be. Challenging but comfortable. I like a challenge. You know, I get bored, so I get bored easily, so it's good to have a few challenges. But it's a good place. We really love it. Yeah.
Great. That's good. That's good to hear. Because I've kind of been off Facebook, so I haven't been keeping track of people.
Same. I haven't been on Facebook either. So. Yeah.
Marianne, let's allow Kim an opportunity to read her work.
Okay, I'm gonna take the phone off.
Okay.
Thank you, Marianne.
Thanks. Good to talk.
Marianne's the greatest.
I love her.
I do too. I do too. She's a phenomenal person.
She is a phenomenal person.
Well,
yes,
Kim, back to you. Please share some more of your work.
Okay. This is, by the way, the one I wrote, Boy, and Marianne also published. And then this one called Ascension, she published as well. Tallest trees, yet greener than the ancient pine. Oaks swaying, branches stretched. I watch them. Get to know their cadence and chatter, noise to fill a house haunted by death. Walking corpses entombed, petrified sorrow preached its thing, dissolves on the tongue. Why not swallow your fear? Life is for the living. Their young eyes drive darkness from forgotten corners, clearing cobwebs, gathered dust, rusted remains, rendered in a root of righteousness and rage at God. My will, not his, be done. But the seed drifted, and from those tired bones reached the smiles of children, so much like their father and his father long ago, shining like sunlight on Pluto's face, bathing, caressing, until a fissure is made, God's promises fulfilled, should one care to notice, are right here in front of us. The end.
You know, writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience. Others write because to stay silent is not an option. Why do you write? And maybe you've shared that in different ways tonight.
To stay silent is not an option.
All right. What do you mean by that?
As a matter of fact, well, I have a brand called Breaking the Legacy of Silence. That's kind of a tagline that I've used in my writing, especially in nonfiction. When I wrote a column for 5-to-1 magazine for about a year and a half,
okay.
I wrote a weekly column, and I wrote on some pretty controversial topics, and some of them were about sexual abuse, domestic violence, alcoholism, the LGBT community, because I have two family members who are transgender. And I just stayed silent in so many ways, except for the poetry. Like I said earlier, my voice didn't start to become something that I came into my own with until later in my life, but the poetry was always there trying to get out and get everything out. And so I think that that's primarily the reason I write anything, is that I can't be silent anymore, because being silent was it was like drinking poison for me.
Okay. Okay. So then, what do you think the role of poetry should be in modern day society? To do what?
Well, I think it should be
in modern day society.
In modern day society, I think poetry is how we hear one another.
Mm.
I mean, to be to be heard is the doorway to healing. It's the doorway to connection. And everything about my poetry, as I said before, is relationship related. So, and I believe in this. I believe it's the relationship that heals. It's a relationship with ourselves. It's our relationship with our higher power. It's our relationship with one another that heals. And so poetry gives us that conduit.
Okay. Well, let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Back. I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Kim Bailey. This is Quintessential Listening Poetry. Kim, what
yes.
role should a title play in a poem? What role should the title play?
Well, it's the beginning, so I think it has a preeminent role. Although, that being said, my titles don't really necessarily come until after I write the poem.
All right.
So, and I don't think that it should necessarily give everything away in the title either, that
okay.
it should just be something that leads the reader into the words. You know, something maybe it's like a hook, you know.
Like a hook.
Like a blurb.
All right. Well, share some more of your titles and hooks when you share your next works.
Okay. These poems, I'm going to read two, and they're not very long, but they were published by the Scarlet Leaf Review, and their very first print publication in July of 2017. Mental pressure. Purge words black on white, regurgitation. I don't remember eating that slip of a tongue, so hot my teeth are charred. Even I think too much. What would happen if I swallowed shame again, feasted on fear instead of fierce words from my fingers to the page? Pressured, speech spilling like marbles from my mouth, where thoughts fall and break against a granite tomb. Tourette's of the heart, hope flung and dashed. Distracted, deeming the delivery and reception of greater value than my truth. I release you into the ether, a zephyr through skies azure, on bat wings into the abyss. Abide with light and dark. Collect density as you fall. Travel and transform. Shining particles inked now expand, electrons and protons, pages of pure wrath and want until my soul becomes synergy. All its own. The end. Death's Head Hawk Moth.
Right.
That's a mouthful. Metamorphosis is imminent. As I lie still on these dark leaves, lemon verbena sustains my growth. gray and large mandibles click. Back off before I play and dance for you. Do not disturb. There is more to me than this. I'll show you as I burrow. The dark soil holds me still. Old skin sloughed, removed, ready for resurgence, radical and free. I fly with force and wisdom, seeking sweet honey. Songs on my yellow-black wings, wondrous my voice can pierce. My head a skull, shocking your eyes and ears as I soar away. The end.
Some poets are also active in other creative areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry or literature activities?
I think my most favorite is playing guitar, not very well.
Okay, all right.
And writing songs and listening to music, mostly lyrical singer-songwriter music, because words just mean everything to me. So.
Yes, yes. Well, please share another, speaking of words.
Okay. Our first New Year's Eve. This bitter night, the last and first of a year, exhausting in its inimical advance. Here, we are plucking daisies from air. It fills our lungs with icy disdain, yet we lie here together. Your body presses against mine, your breath punctuated with dreaming sounds, cicadas singing in my ears, and yet I bask in expectation of joyful songs of warmth for us amid glacial nights rendered by pain and loss. Reconstructed in our refusal to surrender to sorrow. The end.
Do you have a writing group or community of writers that you share your work with?
I do. I have a few groups for the different writing that I do. I have some poetry friends, and then I have some nonfiction friends. And then I have some fiction, mostly short story friends that, now, I haven't written a lot of fiction lately, which is something that I want to get back into, but right now I think I'm more focused on the nonfiction and the poetry because I think it's something that comes more natural to me.
Yes.
So, yeah. But yes, I do have some people with whom I share my work, and they tell me, you know, maybe you need to cut this or change this, or they ask a lot of questions so that they can draw out, you know, whether I'm going with a passage or, you know, a paragraph or a piece, and they help me a lot, and I highly recommend it.
All right.
For everyone.
What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice?
Well, now that relationship is more in tune with one another. I think it's more cohesive now than it used to be, because it used to be that my written voice was one thing and my speaking voice was another. And the speaking voice was the one that didn't really tell the truth or offer the truth.
Mm.
But the written voice just always offered the truth. And now I think that they're both one and the same.
Well, we're almost out of time, but please share one more piece before we go, and I have one more question.
Okay. Okay, this one is called She. No secret summer feared for change incurred or inspiration instilled in minds and hearts, people who prefer boxes or one way of being. True, reasoning, through fear of someone, something other than dogmatic beliefs, comfortable cocoons of citizenry, acceptable alliances, demeaning a woman's voice and vector, her soothsaying expose of his underbelly, unconscionable abuse, apathy, arrogant illusion, ignorance and teaching. She is less. Hate hinders her purpose. Nothing but a placeholder in history? How? No one can explain it. Why do I care if no one else cares? All the weight, wringing of hands to cup her face in darkness to drink her years of sorrow. She is me. The end.
When people... Wow, you're great. You're amazing. When people hear your work... When people hear your work, they usually... I'm sure they usually want more. I'm sure they want more.
Thank you.
What's next for you as a poet?
Sorry, what was that last part, Michael?
What's next for you as a poet?
I've got a chapbook I'm putting together. So speaking of more, I plan on putting some chapbooks and some poetry collections out there. So hopefully people will want more and more of that. So my goal is to have at least one of those out by the end of the year.
Do you have a title?
Yes and no.
Yes and no?
Yes and no.
Okay. We'll leave it there.
Titles always come last. I don't know why.
Oh, right.
They just do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
They just do.
Well, look, I'd like to thank you for being a guest on the show. You're an amazing talent. I appreciated hearing your words of truth. I just appreciate you. And
thank
I'd like you,
you
to
so
come
much.
Back. I'd like you to come back. As the year progresses, I'd like you to be a guest again.
I would love that, Michael. Thank you. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
All right, then. Well, have
show.
A great evening. All right. Everyone, have a great evening. And we'll be back next week with Quintessential Listening Poetry.